You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Laura Satsui. State legislators have fast-tracked Senate Bill 1, the California Environmental, Public Health, and Workers' Defense Act of 2019. It is sweeping legislation that would lock current standards in place through January 20th, 2025, the last day of Donald Trump's presidency if he were to win a second term. Proponents see SB 1 as an insurance policy against potential federal rollbacks of environmental and worker safety standards. But opponents say it could stall negotiations over water supplies and hurt farmers. Moderator Kathleen Schock spoke with advocates on both sides of the issue, John Harris of Harris Farms and Kim Delfino with Defenders of Wildlife. Dr. Lisa Bryant, assistant professor of political science at Fresno State, also joined the conversation.
So, Dr. Bryant, I'd like to start with you. You know, this is obviously a very politically driven bill. California Assemblymember Todd Gloria said in a statement, quote, "Despite the Trump administration's desire to roll back key protections for our environment and workers, California will not roll with them. SB 1 is an essential piece of legislation that will ensure our environment and natural resources are preserved and our workers and consumers are protected, even if the federal government recklessly chooses to repeal these standards," unquote. So the political motivation is very upfront. I guess my first of two questions to you is this legal?
Yeah, most likely it is. So states have historically always been the implementer of federal plan, but they've also always been a driver of federal policy. And so lots of environmental policy has been created in California, especially. And the federal government can push back against it. There are some unique exceptions in the law. So, for example, the Clean Air Act of 1970 includes a California exception where California can make higher standards than the federal level because of California's sort of unique problems in terms of population, in terms of geography. And so they do have to apply for a permit to have higher standards than the federal government. But by and large, those permits have been granted to the state because of air quality requirements here. And so there is some precedent for California to be able to have higher standards than the federal government and for states to actually steer environmental policy.
So that was my follow-up question. This is not something that has come out of the blue. We've been here before.
Yeah, there's actually, if in the public policy arena, when you study environmental policy, there's sort of this idea we think about American exceptionalism in a lot of ways. Well, there's California exceptionalism in environmental policy. So we've been, the state has been a driver of environmental policy. If you think of, you know, emission standards for vehicles, all vehicles in the United States meet California emission requirements, right? Like Texas actually even cited this in getting rid of emissions testing because they said, well, California already requires it and all the vehicles come in and meet that standard, so we don't really need to impose this additional tax on our citizens, right? And so this standard has been a driver in terms of vehicle reforms, which, you know, I think we're hearing California talk about again, directly dealing with manufacturers to have stricter standards. And so, yeah, there's a lot of precedent for clean water, clean air being driven by California policy and then changing national policy down the road.
Great. So, John Harris, I'd like to shift the conversation to you. You've been an outspoken critic of SB 1 on the grounds that, the most controversial aspect of the bill is that it would subject the Central Valley Project, which is a federal project, to California's endangered species law. Explain to us what this could mean for Valley farmers.
It has nothing to do with clean air at all. It's all about water standards. And it's really about how much water we can pump out of the canal that comes down from the delta. And that is controlled much by biological opinions of how that those flows in the delta impact endangered species. So it's kind of a convoluted situation. But essentially, it's working now, and we're getting more water under the current rules than there were under the previous rules. And both rules are in compliance with the law. And I don't think tougher standards are inherently good for anyone. In this situation, they're worse. They're, you know, lesser benefit to people because you employ less people and you create less food supplies and the whole farm economy is impacted. So I think we need to have standards that allow us to, you know, pump much water south of the delta as we can. Not have standards that are unrealistic.
So, Kim Delfino, you're with Defenders of Wildlife, which has supported SB 1. Do you agree that this is ultimately about water?
Well, In all honesty, the bill is much broader than water, but the controversy is centering around the water. So the bill has components in it that would maintain or try to maintain baseline minimum standards that the federal government had in effect before this new federal administration on air, on water quality, and on worker and health safety, and on endangered species protection. And as noted by Mr. Harris, that the controversy around SB1 right now is focused on the rules around how we operate our federal and, well, really the federal water project and how it delivers water around the state. So that is the controversy, definitely. But I would say that, you know, I think there's good reason for the folks that are focused on having good rules on how we operate those projects, because we just saw a report released that shows that federal scientists had concluded that the new rules that we expect the federal government to release at the end of the month on how to govern the water project are weaker than previous rules. And in fact, they concluded that they would jeopardize the continued existence of winter run salmon and other species that utilize the delta and the rivers that lead into the delta. And so, yes, it will send more water south, but it will come at great expense to the delta and to the people that rely on the delta for their livelihood, such as salmon fishermen.
I'd like to continue with you. You know, you've been involved with the Environmental Species Act, with issues around the Environmental Species Act, I should say, for many years. How concerned are you about the impact of the rollback of regulations currently? How does this moment in time compare to what you've seen at other points in history?
It's fairly exceptional what we're looking at right now, sort of the juggernaut of rollbacks and changes that we're seeing, particularly with endangered species. I mean, we are already seeing them, of course, with clean air and clean water rules. But with endangered species, with the most recent release of the change in the rules on how the federal government applies the Endangered Species Act, it's unprecedented. And we see this happen. You know, the last time around under the Bush administration, we saw where there was an effort to weaken the rules on how to operate the water projects that ultimately was overturned by the court. But, you know, this time around, it's like I said, it's unprecedented in my 25 years of working on these issues.
So, John Harris, you're not only the chairman of Harris Farms, but also an active member of the Central Valley Business Federation. You know, you spoke earlier about this potentially impacting the economy of the Central Valley. Do you have any tangible evidence of what kind of actual impact we could expect to see in the event that SB1 does come into fruition?
The valley is really impacted. If we don't get sufficient water, and that can be due to, you know, other reasons as well, it's pretty conclusive that the valley economy benefits greatly from water coming from other areas.
So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Valley Edition. I'm speaking with John Harris of Harris Farms. You know, I'm wondering, would you still support the main intent of the bill if the water regulations part was not included?
The bill probably tries to cover too much of the problem. And the other problem is it's going to get dealt with in the kind of waning hours of the legislature. And what comes out might not be really what anyone wants. I think they almost need to go back and start over.
Dr. Bryant, you're a professor of political science. What is your take on the law? Is it attempting to do too much at once?
Possibly, but the idea, I think, that they could go down and pull it out into, you know, smaller bills, exclusively water, exclusively endangered species, is, you know, you probably run a bigger risk of those pieces of legislation becoming even more contentious and even more stakeholders trying to dismantle or add in exactly what they want in each one of those bills. So sometimes these big bills that have a broad intent are easier to get passed. And so you allow more opportunity for people to contribute at this point rather than having, you know, it broken up. I think it probably stands a fairly good chance of passing here with the current legislative body that we have.
You know, Kim Delfino, I'd like to bring you back into the conversation. You know, obviously, detractors of SB 1 are quick to point out how politicized it is, and perhaps are inferring that environmentalists are taking advantage of this political climate to enact something that's rather sweeping and draconian in nature. How might you respond to that criticism?
I think it's kind of an ironic statement, because the reality is that we wouldn't even need this bill if the federal administration, which is very political, wasn't doing what they were doing right now, which is rolling back standards regarding our clean air, clean water, health and safety protections for workers, and endangered species protection. So the reality is that it was the politics at the federal level and the drive to dismantle our environmental protections that has led to the response here in California. Frankly, I'd like to be working on other things than having to try to restate or reinforce minimum federal protections. And I would just go back to a question you had asked about the economic cost to the valley. And believe me, I am not one. I live in Sacramento. I value agriculture and the agricultural history of our valley, and I believe it's very important. But the reality here is that all we're saying is that the rules that are in place right now, the minimum level of protection in place right now, which the agricultural economy is functioning with, that would remain in place. So what we're talking about is loosening up of restrictions that would cost salmon fishermen and the delta and other species and have a negative impact, would send more water south. So it's not an economic cost. It's just that the folks that are in Washington, D.C. right now, who are opposing this bill, but in D.C. weakening environmental protections, just don't want to see all of the work that they've done to weaken these protections get pushed back against by the state of California.
Mr. Harris, before we wrap up, I'd love for you to respond to that statement.
Well, it is a classic argument of fish versus people. I mean, that oversimplifies it. We all value species and want to protect them, but there's a balance, and it should be based on good science. And that's all we're asking, is that they use the latest science to determine what level to pump at. It depends on who's looking at it, I guess. But I think we do a lot of harm if we cut back on amount of water that can be pumped from the delta at a time that it's available and the agriculture and urban areas need it.
You referenced the use of old science. Can you unpack that a bit?
Well, there's new science showing that these biological opinions, which is, as I understand it, is saying, okay, you've got these flows in the delta. What happens under this? I mean, every day is different. It's sort of man-made. It's not a man-made situation. It's just, it depends on the way the water's flowing, how much in harm's way some of the smelt and salmon are placed. And what happens is they get eaten by some of these predator fish like the black striped bass. So there's so many stressors besides just the amount pumped. But the only thing that's dealt with is the amount pumped, and that's dealt with by these biological opinions, and we want to make sure they use the best science on those, not necessarily use science that was devised 10 years ago.
Well, I want to make sure we don't fall into the trap of oversimplifying this conversation and making it about, fish versus ag. But Kim Delfino, I would like to give you a chance to respond.
Sure. And I appreciate that. And I don't think this is fish versus agriculture. Like I said, you know, we want a thriving agricultural economy. The issue right now on the science is that, number one, the bill specifically gives the discretion to the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Fish and Game Commission on what is the best science. It does. As opposed to what the opponents are saying, it definitely does not lock into place old science. And I would not want to lock in place old science. We want to have new science, and we want to be able to rely on the best science. I find it interesting that the opposition continues to point to the fact that they believe this bill would lock in old science, when there was just a story in the LA Times today documenting the initial biological opinion that the National Marine Fisheries Service was about to issue on the proposed new rules for the Federal Water Project, but got pulled back because National Marine Fisheries Service said that the new rules that the Bureau of Reclamation wanted to use would unequivocally jeopardize the continued existence of endangered winter-run salmon, spring-run Chinook, Central Valley steelhead, and southern resident killer whales, which is highly unusual for the federal government to actually conclude that there's going to be a jeopardy from the operations. That opinion got yanked back at the last minute and is now undergoing a quote-unquote review. And so, you know, I think there's this question where we are really concerned about the fact that the federal government itself is not going to be relying on the best science. And we'd prefer, in that case, to have this, the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Fish and Game Commission decide, you know, best what's the best available science.
So we just have a couple minutes before we wrap up. Dr. Bryant, I'd like to give you the last word. You said that Senate Bill 1 is likely to pass given the current makeup of California's legislative.
I said I thought I had a good chance. I think another thing, listening to the discussion of the other two guests, something that's important to stress is that states have always had the right to implement EPA policies, right? So when EPA's pass policies and regulations, so whether it's federal policy on how water is distributed, states propose a plan to the federal government. They say, this is how we're going to regulate it. This is how we're going to maintain it. This is what works best for our states, because all states and all regions are not the same. And so the idea that just because something is federal water, it doesn't mean that the feds always come in and regulate that water. States have often been the regulators of federal policy. And so, you know, I think that that's at play here, too. So.
But even if the bill passes, we could expect to see some legal challenges, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Great. Thank you all for being with us. We really appreciate your perspective.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.